Belugas were gone, and they used to have some porpoises, which were rescues because they had been injured. It's not their dorsal fins, the side fins, I can't remember what they're called, had been injured, so they were quite small. They had to have some parts of it amputated.
Those have been taken out as well.
I don't think they've been returned to the wild because of their injuries, but have you ever seen orcas?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never been to aquarium in Vancouver.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to see them last month from the ferry. I was traveling over to Victoria and saw they announced from the ferry that we would be passing a pod. And it was quite a large pod, probably 15 or 20 individuals just at the mouth of Active Pass, which is always exciting to see when you get the chance for that. All right. Ayu is going to bring us her artist profile.
Yes.
So take it away.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Today, I want to introduce you to one of my favorite music artists, Mika Nakashima. And she is a Japanese singer who debuted in 2001. Let's start with the first song called Orion, released in 2008.
Naitanoa,
That was Orion by Mika Nakashima. Now let me share a little more about her. Mika Nakashima is a Japanese singer who debuted in 2001. She has also been active as a model and actress. When she was 18, she sent a demo tape of her singing voice to the record company, and it resulted in her debut. People in the industry recognized her talent and chose her as the lead actress in a Japanese drama in 2001. In addition, she made her debut as a singer by performing the theme song for the drama. What I like about her is the way she sings. She's really good at putting her emotions into the song, and I can feel that she's singing from the depth of her heart. Even without seeing her face, I can imagine the expressions she's making. And sometimes I even feel like she's crying while singing. I think her breathing in between songs makes us feel that way. Some people believe in silent breath for smoother singing, but I think the way of breathing is also a way of expression, and it often adds more color to the songs. Her delicate falsetto is another thing I really love about her voice. Her songs often have a high pitch, and I can tell it's so hard to sing, but she really knows how to use her falsetto in a beautiful way. It's very nice to listen to, and it always makes me feel calm and relaxed. Also, I'm always surprised that she's not only good at singing in a delicate and soothing way, but also with a powerful voice. When the song reached the climax part, she puts more and more emotion into them, and the volume of her voice also changes a lot. But even when she sings strong and powerful, she still makes me feel accepted and embraced. Both powerful and delicate exist, so this may be another reason why her voice is so emotional. Now let's move on to her second song, Yuki no Hana. I love this song, and it's actually one of her most famous songs in Japan. Yuki no Hana translates to snow flowers in English, and the lyrics explore the beautiful theme of love, loss, and the fleeting nature of life. It was released in 2010. Thank you. was Yuki no Hana by Mika Nakashima. Sorry, I said it was released in 2010, but it's actually released in 2003. Sorry. And I'm very glad to share one of my favorite Japanese singers, Mika Nakashima, with you today. Let me tell you how to spell her name, and her first name, Mika, is spelled M-I-K-A, and her last name, Nakashima, is spelled N-A-K-A-S-H-I-M-A. I hope you like her songs, and if you're interested in her, you can listen to her music on Spotify, Apple Music, and other music streams. That's all from me. Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Kereru, green-blue pigeons native to New Zealand, like to sun themselves after a good meal. Kereru have a distinct preference for fruit. In fact, many local trees depend on these pigeons. They're the only birds left that can both ingest and pass the seeds from the fruits of many native trees. But in warm summer months, the birds sunbathing has a surprising side effect. A part of their digestive system, called the crop, stores their latest snack, where it begins to ferment. The birds, in essence, brew their very own batch of boutique throat wine. The rotund creatures often get so tipsy that they fall out of trees, prompting compassionate Kiwis, New Zealanders, not the birds, to deliver them to local bird rescues and let them sober up. One manager said it was ridiculous. People were bringing armfuls of these flaming drunk pigeons. In 2018, the citizens of New Zealand voted the Kereru as Bird of the Year. Perhaps conservation organization Forest and Bird described the species best. That absolute unit, the roundest boy, the devourer of fruit, the whooshiest of whooshes. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Speak Up. My name is Magnus. I'm your host for today. And in the studio with me are Ayu and Peter. And Peter, you have a topic you want to discuss today.
Okay. Well, there's been a little talk about the World Economic Forum. And I think one of the effects of it, like one of the things that we've heard about is the Volkswagen deal, where we have at least $16 billion subsidy to the transnational Volkswagen.
So this was a deal between the federal government and Volkswagen.
Yes.
To establish a battery plant, I believe it was.
Yes.
Like an electric, for batteries for electric cars.
Instead of us creating our own companies, our own industry and so on.
And the federal government ponied up.
And actually,
$13 billion or something like that?
At least $16
billion. Yeah.
Okay. At least $16 billion. And then the Epoch Times is no longer free, the English edition, but I get emails sporadically from them about articles. And one was of another battery plant in Windsor. And this was
Stellantis,
which bought Chrysler. Yeah. And this is what they call a wholly owned subsidiary, which means the head company owns 100% of the common stock, which is the Canadian company. Mm-hmm. And what's happened with this is that it's actually $10 billion subsidy, and some of the Liberal MPs don't want to disclose the entire. All the information supposedly, mm-hmm. And there's another group. It's a South Korean company, LG Energy, and the Windsor RCMP caught an ambassador from South Korea to find out about job creation there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically the article. So it's a second one.
Yeah.
And anyway, yeah, so...
Yeah, one of the things I heard about that Windsor plant is that, you know, part of the logic and the argument for the subsidies is that we would create these plants here and the employment that goes with it. And one of the things apparently is that they're going to be importing hundreds of workers from South Korea to work at the plant, which sort of is certainly a strange deal. I mean, you know, if we're subsidizing this, you know, this company with the idea of you know, creating an industry here with employment, and then all of a sudden we're bringing in foreign workers to work in the plant, that sort of seems a little crazy. I mean, part of the argument that I read, and I, you know, I can't, you know, validate this entirely, is that, you know, these foreign workers are needed to get the plant up and going, because the experience or the skill set doesn't exist here yet, because we don't have big battery plants. But it's still pretty funny. I mean, I remember hearing about a mine or something up in northern BC somewhere, where, you know, they were allowed to create this mine, and then instead of, it was a Chinese company in that case, and then instead of hiring local folks to work on it, they were going to import a whole bunch of Chinese laborers to work on this plant. And it's like, oh, that doesn't seem like a great deal. Anyway, I should have.
Okay, no, you're giving a bit of background.
Yeah.
And as I said, actually, Ideas, which is on CBC Radio, they did a show on the World Economic Forum on May 23rd, 2023 of this year. And one thing that they had. They were a bit critical of the forum. They didn't. They said, well, they were a bit critical of people that are overtly critical of it. But they actually had someone who was from the Fraser Institute,
mm-hmm,
who was critical of the forum, which is interesting. They had a few academic voices against it.
So what is the World Economic Forum?
Well, my understanding, it's basically they meet and they talk about...
Who's the they?
They. Well, Quasquab. You're one of the they that always say they. Anyway, my father used to tell me that all the time. But anyway, no, Quasquab has operated since 1971.
Yeah.
And I have the cost here. How much? Yeah. It costs a bit just to be...
Who are the people who are at the World Economic Forum?
Well, you get the... IMF,
yes,
president comes, yeah, to it. I checked into it.
Because isn't it like world leaders of government, and then,
yes,
lots of people representing big industry? So it's,
yes,
sort of,
it's a cross section.
So it's like a little club where biggest industry gets to talk and persuade.
Well, one argument,
you know, international leaders about what they should do, what they should be doing.
Well, on that CBC Ideas program, they said organized labor isn't involved with the World Economic Forum. You don't have that voice with it.
Right.
And there's another forum in Dubai every year, the World Government Summit every year. And that actually got the director of the IMF for that. It got the Vice President of the United States came to that. And Dubai is sort of a questionable country.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I saw was in the Hyatt Hotel, they had a foreign worker there, and they always asked them to have their actual passports placed in an actual safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a story on YouTube about somebody who said, okay, it happened. But when he wanted to leave, they said, oh, you're going to have to get two other people to sign, and if you don't come back, they're going to be docked a month's pay and so on. So
right.
I think there's a lot of questionable things in Dubai. And
yeah, I've definitely heard a lot about, you know, the problems with conditions for workers there, because it's an oil state. You know, it's in the Middle East on the Persian Gulf, and they have lots of oil money, and much of the labor force that works there is actually imported temporary foreign workers from, you know, places like India and Pakistan and other countries like that. So, as you say, they, you know, they are there, they have, you know, as temporary workers, and they have to surrender their passports, and there's lots of problems about, you know, the independence they can have once they're there, stuff like you're saying, where, you know, they can't just get, you know, their passport is taken away, which sort of restricts their ability to move or even leave the country, and things like, and then problems with worker conditions. You know, one of the tall, well, I think it is the currently the tallest building in the world is situated in there, and apparently there were real problems with it, with its construction, and lots of deaths involved.
Well, I just find it kind of hypocritical that they have this World Government Summit every year, and there's a lot of problems with how they're operating their country. No, I'm serious.
No, I get what you mean. It's like, you know, the World Government Summit, and then it's a, you know, basically a petro-monarchy that is hosting. It's not a democracy or something else.
They do have the vice president of the United States came at, but the IMF director went to it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's and as I said, what kind of globalism do we wind up getting? We get these expensive plants to bring in workers from South Korea to Ontario.
Well, I think we get a kind of corporate globalism, right? That, you know, arranges international affairs to suit very large corporations, and not, you know, all the people of the world. You know, as you mentioned, you know, I can't remember which one it was, that where, you know, there's not trade union representation. There's
right
corporate, lots of corporate representation, but not somebody actually organizations
representing. That's the World Economic Forum, really doesn't have it.
Not organizations representing workers.
And you have to pay a fee to be part of that World Economic Forum also.
All right. Well, thanks for bringing that to us today, Peter.
Okay.
All right. Just last week, Shane McGowan, lead singer of seminal Irish band The Pogues, passed away. They were practically created a whole new genre of music, of punk folk, bringing the energy of punk rock to traditional Irish folk music, pretty much invented by them. A number of great records, and then a little later on had a huge hit, which you hear every year, called Fairy Tale of New York. We're going to play a track called Dirty Old Town. This is from their one of their early albums called Rum, Sodomy, and the Lash. This is The Pogues and Dirty Old Town.
Met my love by the gasworks wall. Dreamed a dream by the old canal. I kissed my girl by the factory wall. Dirty old town. Drifting across the moon, cats are prowling on their beams. Springs a girl from the streets at night. Dirty old town, dirty old town.
The Pogues, Dirty Old Town from Rum, Sodomy, and The Lash. Shane McGowan passed away on Friday at just 65 years of age. That's the end of our program for today. Democracy Now! Is coming up in a few minutes. Thanks for joining me today, guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Peter and I will be back next week.